The future belongs to the fast. The digital economy is driving business and industry into unprecedented transformation. Visionaries, disruptors, those bent on reinventing the way things get done, are turning to Hewlett-Packard Enterprise. With years of experience in delivering what's new and what's next, this new company is positioned better than ever to deliver the IT solutions to propel you into the future. Hewlett-Packard Enterprise. Accelerating next.
Hello all, welcome to the NRF1 podcast after the British Grand Prix, one that brought Formula 1 back with a bang. Top of the pops, F1 back on fine form. My name is Michael Bailey. I am here today with Kyle Cumbers and Richard Baxter. Gentlemen, welcome. Good to see you both. Kyle, how are you?
I'm very well, enjoying a nice Norwich sunny evening.
It is primed in summer. We are halfway through the season now, over halfway through the season now.
That's pretty scary, really, isn't it? The summer break is not too far away. Yeah. Where's it gone?
It is nuts, and we'll be getting tucked into that soon, of course. Rich, how are you this fine day?
Yeah, I'm very good, thank you. You know, breeze through the traffic on the way, so always makes a great start to a podcast when that happens.
Like Lewis himself. A terrific race at Silverstone. We will tee up everything that happened at Silverstone now, and what we will be is back then with a second podcast, back in our usual routine later, well, in a few days' time, I suppose, probably, with looking ahead to Hungary and all the predictions latest. I have finally updated everything, you'll be delighted to know. But let's get stuck into Silverstone first of all. Lewis Hamilton winning his third British Grand Prix, which I think there's only three men who have done that, aren't there, Kyle?
Yeah, I mean, Jim Clark's got five wins.
Yeah.
And Jackie Stewart, he's equaled, I believe. Right. Yes, he's just equaled, yeah. So he's breaking records at the moment.
He is. It's special stuff. He's also, what did I also pick up on? His pole position means that he is now third in the all-time pole sitters behind only Michael Schumacher and Ayrton Senna. I think Lewis liked that one. And he's now led more consecutive races than anyone else ever in Formula One. So he has had the lead of 18 Grand Prix in a row. He's not obviously won them all, but he's had the lead, and that's a new record as well. So is Lewis starting to prove what he is and his place in history already, do you think?
I think if he retired tomorrow, he would still go down as a legend of F1. Especially a British legend. I think we should enjoy him in the middle of his career breaking every record, it seems, at the moment. I think we should just enjoy it, because it'll soon be over, unfortunately.
That's the way. Right off.
The way time seems to fly by, you know. Careers soon end. But just enjoy it, really, at the moment.
It does make me think of when a good driver, and that, I don't want to underplay it, but let's say a very good driver, excellent driver, however you want to say it, is in a very good car, they do just look unstoppable, don't they? I mean, it was the same with Seb when he was in a Red Bull.
Yeah, it was. I mean, he's one of the top drivers, Hamilton, but he's not also just one of the top drivers. He's what, you know, we call one of the top racers. And when you've got people, you know, like Alonso there, he's double world champion as well, and Hamilton is also. But you think how much time difference there is between them. You know, Alonso was in it way before Hamilton, but, you know, probably a good 5 years before Hamilton. And you know, it's crazy how you've got other drivers there as well, like Button, who's been there a long time. And I suppose you probably wouldn't even put him quite in the same caliber as the best racer, but he's still a good driver. And it's you know, they do look unstoppable, as you say. But not always when there's a Williams involved.
Yeah, we will get stuck into that. Sure, I think there's great stuff in terms of Lewis, what Lewis has done in terms of breaking down barriers in Formula One as well, which sometimes gets overlooked, but I think in terms of opening the sport up to to different people, different from different backgrounds and all that sort of stuff. I think Lewis has done a terrific job, and that was quite difficult at times, say with some of the racial abuse he was getting in Spain and things like that. He's had to work at that, and he's had to take a lot of responsibility on for it too. And all in all, the guys leading the championship back up to 17 points with, I mean, Silverstone was clearly a brilliant race, but the way Lewis drove it sort of belied some of the recent wobbles maybe that there have been.
Yeah, because there must have been a huge amount of pressure on him, because Rosberg won three of the last four, so he needed to win wherever the race was going to be. And I think, like you mentioned, there was 140,000 people there on a Sunday, most of them cheering on him. And there was a, well, yeah, as he said, that a lot of these people save up all year to come watch.
Yeah.
And there was that pressure, and he dealt with it quite well. And I did quite like his comment. He said when the Williams went by him, he thought, actually, this is quite cool because I can put on a bit of a show, really. And I think also Rosberg was behind him, which obviously helped that. But
What does that say of his confidence? The fact that he didn't mind being overtaken, because he knew he'd overtake them again at some point and win the race, or says it all?
Well, he's come out before and said he'd much rather have a race rather than just be sitting at the front, going round and round, winning every race. And you think that's what you want for a driver, you know, from a driver.
He does, but he's only saying that because he knows he'll get past them. He wouldn't be saying that if he thought they'd drive off into the distance, or you know, say if he was in a McLaren at the moment, things like that.
After the safety car, the first safety car, I mean, that showed his confidence to try and to do that move around Massa, around the outside, and just because he didn't seem to care that what could go wrong, where some drivers might go, well, I'll just stick behind here and I'll get them later on. It was just like, all right, I can get it now, and it was just. Yeah. It was just that determination and confidence to try that. And yeah, that's what makes him so interesting, is because he does try them things and try those moves.
I was going to say, when you're thinking as well, like I think it's about 2010, 2011, particularly him and Massa had quite a lot of comings together. And, you know, he was quite, you know, a bit right, you know, right shits on the as he was driving.
Actually, at that corner, wasn't it? I think the British Grand Prix, he was hanging on to podium. He literally barged Massa off.
That was, well, I was going to say, that was, I think that was 2012 that he did that. And the cheer, I had a run of being at the Grand Prix for 3 years. That year, the noise is incredible. I think then the following year was when we had all the tyres blowing up, and Lewis Hamilton was on to win that race and his tyre blew. Since then I haven't been along, but he's won the next two races, so he's probably quite and I'm sure he's not happy. I'm not there, I'm sure he doesn't care, but you know, clearly it's working for him. lucky man indeed. So great stuff for Lewis. As you mentioned, the start of the race, I mean, it was a cracking race. It was probably made by the start. It did get a bit, it was like, I think I tweeted, it was like a demolition derby at the start, because everyone seemed to be wanting to drive into each other. It was the same with Lewis and the restart as well.
It took me about, watched the start about five times just to work out what happened to the third corner, isn't it, technically, because you sort of watch one bit, but then there's like somebody spinning further up and you had to watch that again, and I still don't really know what happened, to be honest.
It was just weird that the two Lotuses and the two McLarens seemed to both almost take each other out. It was like they were attracted to each other.
That, technically, watching the replay several times, wasn't their fault, because I think Ricciardo did a bit of a all-or-nothing move up the inside, and he kind of barged, I'm not sure which Lotus it was, but barged one Lotus into the other. And Alonso then tried to avoid it and then spun into Button. And it was just a bit of a, what? And I mean, we haven't had a first lap crash in ages, have we? You know, right at the start. And I was watching some classic Grand Prix from, you know, like the late 90s. And you had like Fisichella going over the top of one of the Saubers and stuff like that. And it's just like, whoa, it's shocking to watch. But, you know, when you see him get out and walk away, it's entertaining. And I mean, there's two races on the trot now. We had it in Austria, didn't we, with Alonso and Raikkonen. And we've had it again in this race, so.
Well, that crash, though, still has me shivering. I still don't understand how Alonso's car missed Raikkonen's head, which is probably quite a serious point, really. But a cracking race built around the rain as well. I mean, Silverstone at its best. And do we have to accept, I suppose, we're not going to have a race like that every weekend, but that doesn't matter as long as we get them sometimes, and we got them this weekend.
And it makes them races special, doesn't it? I've enjoyed the first, before the pit stops, and when it's two Williams, two Mercedes, because there's four cars no more than 4 seconds apart, flat out around a brilliant track, just watching them. There's no overtaking, but it was just watching cars flat out and a track testing F1 cars. And it was just good to watch that. Yeah. So, and obviously then later on the rain added a bit more spice.
Indeed it did.
That was brilliant, because when we were sitting there, you see Massa came through one of the corners. I think it was the Maggots Beckett's complex. Yeah. And he threw the car around, and you're thinking, there's no way that's going to stay on. It just did, and it's like, wow. But that took credit to the Williams for the first stint, really. They weren't just ahead by luck or on merit. You know, they actually got there themselves. You know, they got a good start and they were ahead, and they weren't really holding up the Mercedes, because they weren't really challenging to overtake, were they? They were just kind of sitting behind, and yeah, it was brilliant to watch. And I think the first four cars, there's a big gap after them,
yeah,
back to the next car as well. So
I'm going to stop you there, because we're going to come on to Williams in a moment. Silverstone, a great success. You mentioned there were 140,000 there on the Sunday. That was obviously, and then it was still 100,000 certainly for Saturday, I think. And probably. Friday they have an open day on Thursday. Yes. It's a fan day as well as a press day now. It's probably the most successful race on the calendar, or certainly one of, isn't it? With and Silverstone have been, you know, quite vocal about how they've changed it. They've tried to emphasise this festival feel. I mean, I quite fancy going back again. I don't know about you.
Yeah, I've only done the odd day in previous years. I sort of quite like to watch the race at home, but I sort of missed it. I thought the atmosphere looked brilliant. Obviously, the weather helped.
Yeah,
before the weekend, during the weekend, it just looked Yeah, like you said, it was a festival of motorsport, and it was actually quite proud to be British, to sort of the show they put on. Proper sporting event.
I wonder if next year we'll have to do an NRF1 at Silverstone trip.
Well, I was just thinking the same thing, actually. But I was also going to say, 140,000 people there. I mean, that's more than the capacity of like Wembley Stadium, for example, and everything else. Yeah. And you think, is that just what F1 needs? The mass support from just one pretty small nation, to be honest, just to turn up and really give every driver support, and it spurs them on quite clearly, because we had a cracking race. And even Rosberg and Vettel on the podium, they were saying, you know, Silverstone, you've been amazing, and you think, credit to the fans.
I was reading a lot of their sort of tweets from sort of foreign journalists, and they're like tweeting at like 7 o'clock in the morning, and the place was full. And sort of remember last year for like the Saturday, and the amount of people still watching GP3 races,
yeah,
and like with Fridays, and the amount of people just there, and it's probably
the one thing that Formula One's made me realise is the difference between the number of fans at the venue watching it and how that atmosphere translates to watching it at home, and making people at home wanting to watch something as well, which you don't always see that connection
sometimes. When you actually hear the crowd as well roaring, when like Hamilton came through the last corner and stuff like that, and even just basically every lap he drove past, there was a big cheer from the crowd.
Yeah. Horns going, isn't there?
And that's just, it. Yeah.
Well, next year then, boys. I think we might have to seriously think about this, and we'll see if we can get away with some podcasting as well. We pay for a ticket; it'll be fine. It's easier than getting a press, press accreditation, because you can't record anything then.
Oh, and to be honest, it's not far off my birthday as well.
Oh, my birthday's... I'm not paying for you. I can't afford that. Dear Lord.
What a birthday trip that would be, though.
I'll be paying you back, and paying for it for, you know, however long. Although it's supposed to be cheaper, isn't it? Anyway. Okay, it's time for these. That's right, it's the NRF1 pit stops. Now, Rich, I promised you we would get back to this. You were singing Williams praises. It must be said, the start was magical. I don't know. I mean, it was immense how the two Williams just propelled themselves away, and both Mercedes seemed to get a little bit bogged down in the sort of second stage of their starts.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it was a particularly bad start for the Mercedes, because they didn't go backwards and lose, you know, 5-6 places. But the Williams just seemed to really light it up, and they were gone. And that was just like, wow, you're just sitting there watching TV, and that was the last thing you would expect. And you're just like, wow, it was just like, go on.
Because
you get someone else in the lead, you know you've got a race starting. But to be honest, I thought they did really well, Williams. I know other people have different opinions on this.
Okay, well, we should just say that I was live tweeting on our Twitter account, which is at the NRF1. You can obviously still see all the tweets if you want to relive the race, and hopefully we'll be doing that for future races as well, if we can, certainly, but as and when. So make sure you give it a follow and a look. on that, I was a bit annoyed because you just felt, and I wasn't the only one, if they'd have just let Valtteri Bottas past Felipe Massa, who clearly wasn't quick enough to just drift past his teammate, but may have got a bit of a lead had he been let through. That said, did the rain mean that they didn't blow it at all because they couldn't drive in the wet?
Yeah, in the end, the rain, unfortunately, Williams cars seems quite slow in the rain.
No downforce.
So, yeah, they didn't lose the win. They lost the win because of the rain. But
if it had been dry, would they have lost the win? Because I'd just, you know, just let him through.
I don't agree with letting him through. But they shouldn't have stopped him from going through so early on in the race. We sort of can moan in the past if the team order isn't letting through. If I'd have been on the pit wall, I probably would have said, let him through. But as a fan, just let him race. Because to be fair, I think Massa said afterwards that he was quick on the hard tyre. That didn't really matter because I think Bottas would have got through and would have got even a 3 second lead, then Hamilton would have had to overtake him on track.
Yep.
Which obviously wasn't easy because Williams never seems to be easy to overtake. So, yeah.
I think that's almost the point, isn't it? That there was a period where they told them not to race while they figured out what they were going to do. And then by the time Hamilton had got ahead of him in the pit stop, they're like, yep, you're free to race now.
Yeah.
It's like, well, yes. And there is this history, I think, of teams who aren't used to winning. I know Williams have won, well, I suppose it was 2012, was it, the last win?
That was.
With Maldonado?
Yeah.
Okay, so that, you know, they really aren't used to winning then. But, you know, they struggle when they're in that situation and they have to make a call. They suddenly get hypersensitive. And, I mean, admittedly, maybe they should have been worried about Ferrari rather than Mercedes, but they just seem to ruin it a bit for me.
That's what I was thinking. The constructors, they're nearest to fighting the Ferrari, so they're quite a long way clear of Red Bull in fourth, to be honest, over 100 points clear, and they're still about 60 points to Ferrari. But I mean if they keep maximising points like that, whereas Ferrari were not struggling, but they were behind them at that point anyway. But I mean, with Massa especially, I think they did it when he first joined the team last year, and they said the same message, didn't they, that he got when it was when he was teammates with Alonso at Ferrari, and they basically said to him, oh, Valtteri's faster than you. And he'd basically get out of the way, and I don't think they wanted to do that again, to be honest.
It would be nice to Felipe, I suppose. Mercedes did do a dummy pit stop to try and coax Williams out early. Did anyone buy that? Williams certainly didn't.
No, because it's against the rules, isn't it?
It is, but, and Toto Wolff admitted that they did it as a dummy, really. Yeah.
But then how can there be a penalty for it? Because you can't put a penalty against a driver, because you don't know which driver was going to pit.
They probably know that.
So I was wondering why is that why they do it. But
fine them? They haven't got much money, have they, I don't think?
Not at all.
No.
So, yeah, I think it's a sort of bit of a gentleman's rule, I suppose, and
wasn't very gentlemanly of them. No, it wasn't, was it? And I suppose there's not a lot Williams could do about how bad they were in the wet. I mean, Valtteri Bottas, where did he come in the end? Was it fifth?
A minute behind
Hamilton. Massa fourth. So no Williams on the podium when they probably should have been, really. They should have at least been on the podium, shouldn't they, Richard? I mean, I suppose I heard somewhere that they've built a low downforce car because that's the best way they could make a quick track for as many tracks as possible on the budget they've got. And then I suppose you can't make that quick in the wet, can you?
No, well, they started third and fourth, and if they finished there, you'd have felt, you know, job accomplished. But I mean, there was several things. I mean, Vettel came in for the intermediates just after Hamilton that same lap, so he got the advantage for that while they were, you know, tripping over each other doing another lap in the wet with Rosberg. You know, Vettel was out managing to gain time, but they struggled with their car in the wet last year, and it seems to be the same this year, but maybe not quite to the same extent. But you want to see him higher. You sort that out in the wet and get higher up, really. And you'd have thought in the pit stop a couple of, you know, turns of the wing or something, the front wing, because they'll have to do that, aren't they? So
they really struggled in Monaco, didn't they? Like, really badly. So obviously, there was a real lack of downforce on that car.
And it, they just left the call too late as well, didn't they, to get them both in? Yeah. They got them both in at the same time, so they didn't split it. And
that was good work with that pit stop. They didn't stack them, but they had Massa in, out, and then Bottas was in straight away. It's just like, that's quite slick. And
did you not think it was just a bit showy? And actually, if they'd brought someone in a lap earlier, they probably would have finished closer to the three. Maybe, who knows? But it was Sebastian Vettel who was on the podium for Ferrari. He sort of came from nowhere, didn't he? And they were completely out of it. I mean, they took the punt early to put on the intermediates, and it paid off.
Yeah, I assume it was a Vettel's decision. We all heard it was Hamilton's decision, but I don't know.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, I haven't heard anything, but yeah, because they were behind. Is it correct? Were they behind Hülkenberg?
Yeah.
For a while?
Yeah.
And to be fair, Raikkonen looked the stronger out of the two Ferrari drivers in qualifying. And
I think he went on the tyres too early, didn't he? And that sort of scuppered him. Because I actually thought the Ferrari brought both of their drivers in early for intermediates, but obviously it was only Raikkonen who was too early, so he was scuppered. And then Vettel could carry on. Obviously an inspired decision to get that right, I suppose, just like Lewis's was with his tyres called. But I mean, Ferrari, it seems they're a little bit short still, aren't they?
Yeah, it's a bit disappointing, really, because they were, just looking at qualifying now, was it second they were behind? Mm. Yeah, second behind Mercedes. And it's good early signs, but I think it seems to be the gap is slowly increasing between Mercedes and Ferrari.
And they used some of their engine tokens, didn't they, for a power up boost as well. So I mean, that doesn't seem to have worked.
Spend it on it's on the slot machine. There was a suggestion that the fuel mixes have been investigated, and that has possibly affected Ferrari's output from its engine. Maybe.
Yes.
So that could have affected them possibly. Let's touch on. Well, we were going to talk about the start, but we've done that. But that would have led nicely into McLaren. Oh, gosh, I mean, I feel like we have to talk about them. They're going backwards, judging by qualifying, theoretically.
Yeah.
They seem to be taking too long putting on a front nose now. They can't even do that properly.
Yeah, they put the wrong tyre on, was it Alonso's tyre on Button's car all the way around?
Oh.
During qualifying.
Now, I mean, that's got nothing to do with Honda, has it?
No. But it just seems to, yeah, I don't know, just decisions, just general all over the place seem to be going wrong.
They still managed to scrape a point.
They did. By default, I think, wasn't it? Even Marussia were hopeful they were going to get a point at the weekend after all the retirements.
I was hoping to see that, because that would have been something special, especially with Bianchi, the only driver to get their points, and for them to get some more, that would have been special for them.
Would have been. It's a shame Will Stevens. Well, we'll move it on, but Will Stevens drove into a wall and he was leading Roberto Meri.
Yeah.
And they both spun at some point, didn't they? Well, I think it was because they took the risk of going quite early on the intermediates, which, fair enough, the position they were in.
Well,
the time actual rain came, their intermediates were shot, really. So.
And it's a shame, isn't it? Because for Will Stevens, these are a big moments. You know, you can almost build your reputation on getting things right in these kind of races and picking up a point from where you shouldn't have done.
To be fair to him, that car didn't, when you saw the crash, it just seemed to be like on ice or something. It was going one way, then it went the other, and as soon as he hit the grass, he didn't have a chance of stopping. But as you say, I mean, if he'd been able to make something special out of that situation, I mean, that, yeah, you would have thought next season he'd have a bigger team looking at him. And I think he's got a bit of budget as well there, hasn't he, that he can use. I think he's got a few supporters, I think.
Not in his pay driver though.
Did you like the look of the Marussia?
Well, I was going to say, is it just me or has it changed? I mean, what have they put on it?
It was the sort of
blue
side pod for a new sponsor.
Flexbox
or something, wasn't it?
Flexbox.
Pretty good. Yeah, red, white and blue.
Happy?
British Grand Prix, yeah.
Well, I suppose their manner really, aren't they? And it's the, I don't know why they're really still called Marussia, because I don't even think Marussia exists anymore, does it?
Yeah, I think it's sort of the money reasons. Oh. So.
Well, yeah, why not? Russia and Britain share the same flag colours, of course, so
exactly.
Remarkable. They get on so well as countries too, so that helps.
Everyone's winning.
And what else? Well, I did just want to... I mean, it's interesting that Raikkonen, we sort of touched on him out-qualifying Sebastian Vettel, and we'll talk about Raikkonen, I think, in the other podcast. Daniel Kvyat as well, outperforming Daniel Ricciardo in qualifying. And in the race, in a Red Bull that doesn't appear to be getting any better.
No, well, they seem to have picked up a little bit, but Yeah, Kvyat, he was struggling at the start of the season, you know, it seemed. But he's really picked up from recent races. And credit to him, because you see him walking around and he's so confident. And, you know, you kind of, when he puts in a performance like that, and you kind of think, yeah, you know why you can feel confident now when you're, when you're actually putting a decent performance.
He's got a bit about him, hasn't he?
Yeah, I was impressed last year, and apparently it wasn't picked up on TV, but apparently he spun, and there's a good chance that he might have been challenging Vettel on the podium.
Really?
About the spin.
Right? Yeah, that's what Christian Horner said, wasn't it, in an interview afterwards. So,
I think it's good. It's good he's showing a bit of form.
Which takes us nicely on to our of the weekends. Seamless, you see what I did there. Shall we start with the driver? I have one contender, but I'd like to hear yours first.
I'm going to go for Nico Hülkenberg.
Oh, actually, we didn't talk about Force India, and I was going to. So we could talk about Force India now, but yes, yeah. Nico Hülkenberg.
Oh, he was running. It was correct. He was running fifth for quite a while.
He was.
Good pace as well. He seems to gain a huge amount of confidence from his Le Mans win, and it's good timing. Yeah, I thought it's a good race.
You're laughing at that, Rich.
Yeah, because I think every time on the BBC when they mentioned his name, it was Le Mans winner Nico Hülkenberg is in fifth place. It's just like, we know he's won Le Mans, give it a rest now.
Oh, you can't get tired of it, Rich, you can't. But it is worth saying that Force India, who are of course based at Silverstone, literally on the side of the circuit, rolled out their B-spec car for the first time, and it's quick.
It is, yeah. They were talking about an interesting nose design. They've got kind of two slot gaps to keep the lows low. That's hard to say.
The lows low.
The nose low. And but let the air in under the car, and it seemed to be working quite well. And they said in the windy conditions it was working well, which they were talking they had at Silverstone. So, and that, yeah, it bodes well for the rest of the season.
So only the next couple of races, power circuits. So, yeah.
And they're, I've got to do some maths. 24 points behind Red Bull now in the constructors. So I mean they're in for a shout, so they're getting fourth, which would be the best they've ever done. So
it would be remarkable. That was your maths in real time, by the way. I haven't edited how long that took. So well done. I don't know how long it would have taken me. So you said Nico Hülkenberg for driver of the weekend. Have you got a driver of the weekend, Rich?
I was thinking Hülkenberg, but also you have to say, to be honest, Hamilton, British Grand Prix, British winner, and he did a show, he won the race. Boom.
I was going to say Daniel Kvyat, actually, for how he outstripped Daniel Ricciardo, especially Hamilton, obviously down for his exploits. And he did with, you know, things like his in-lap, outstripping when everything was still dry. I think he really did win the race, which is always good to see. But the special nomination I have is Driver of the Weekend, Sam Duncan. Now, I retweeted a link to this on the NRF1 Twitter feed at the NRF1, in case you missed it from earlier. Sam Duncan, he drove from his home in Diss to Silverstone on his mobility scooter. That's 109 miles, so he could make it to the race. I think he did it for charity. His daughter had to give him a push at one point when he forgot to charge the battery, and he was stopped by the police on the A14 at one point because his GPS system took him onto the dual carriageway where he wasn't supposed to go. But what an effort. So Sam, well done, you're a proper hero, and to be honest, I think we'd all agree, driver of the weekend. Yes. Spot on. How about then our goat of the weekend, who ballsed up?
Massive one, not necessarily a driver, but Alicia Dixon.
Oh, okay.
I don't know if you saw her.
I did. You weren't a fan.
She didn't sing anything wrong. But why was she American? She's known for a bit of kind of garage kind of rapping. And if she had done that to National Anthem, it might have been credit to you. That's what you're known for.
Hang on. You actually wanted her to mix up some sort of garage beats and rap the National Anthem over singing it with an American twang in places?
Well, you know.
I mean, I'd love to have heard that.
It'd been different, wouldn't it? But I mean, she pretended to be an American, and I was just like, don't do that. For me, that was just a bit cheesy.
I actually thought it was quite good. I actually said it afterwards. But Rich, you're entitled to your opinion. We'll definitely take it. How about you, Carl?
I'm struggling a little bit.
Another worthy shout, I should say. You could argue Verstappen.
Yeah, Max Verstappen's not having a good run of it at the moment, is he?
No, he seemed to lose it all on his own after the restart for the safety car, which I thought was actually going to bring another safety car, which in some ways it did, virtual. But yeah, he was up there in practice. I think he was second fastest in one of the practice sessions, wasn't he? But then in qualifying, he seemed to just not have it and just kept whinging, which I didn't really like.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think when it gets tough, he does seem to like a little bit of a whinge.
Yeah, he does at the moment. But he seems to get a lot of credit, but Carlos Sainz is doing a pretty good job and doesn't seem to get as much credit.
No, well, his dad's not in the garage. That probably doesn't help.
No, it doesn't help. And he's 3 years older than
Max. Yeah.
But I'm actually going for Marcus Ericsson.
Oh, what's he done?
Nothing much, but that's kind of the problem. I think it's kind of been building up during the year, but it's like, I've just had enough of him, really.
He's one of Norfolk's sons, though. He's driven for Supernova and iSport, I think. He drove for both in on GP2. Two Norfolk teams. Went to Caterham. I don't know if I can allow that, Kyle. But yeah, he's not been doing a lot.
He did have a shout of getting points, really. He could have, probably should have beaten the McLaren, but he didn't. And I don't really know what happened to him, but...
Well, just getting on his back now. I'm going to have to stand up for him. My nominations were going to be Frankie Dettori doing the podium interviews. I mean, no. What? Go on.
I was horrified when I heard it was him.
But... I don't know what the but's going to be, because that was it, and then it was, and then it was that bad.
I had such low expectations. Maybe it wasn't that bad, really.
Did you see him try to hug Sebastian Vettel? Who's that? Seb was like, arms.
Well, I have no idea who you are.
No, he didn't. Probably.
But not being stereotypical, but in Italy.
Oh gosh.
In Italy, Ferrari is Italy, isn't it? Every Formula One fan in Italy is a Ferrari fan, and I think he said that. Oh, I'm a big Ferrari fan. I have to hug you. And I was waiting for him to do that, to be honest. And if anyone's seen the film Cars, you know there's that little thing in it which says, you met Ferrari? No? Okay, I'm not interested. And to be honest, that just seems to me what it's a bit like. And
I haven't seen the film Cars, so maybe I should do that. I mean, all right. The main issue is that he kept interrupting the answers. But then maybe I do that, so maybe whichever. But and the other one, don't know whether to mention this or not. There was a Slicks 06 on 5 Live. I was listening to it, and I think the second, third caller was Stephen from Norwich. And it was, I have to be honest, I heard his first bit, and he was obviously very happy to be speaking to Susie Perry, a bit too much. And then I actually skipped it forward because it was so cringy. Clearly, by how the conversation was going at the end between the other people in the studio, it was really bad. So I haven't heard it, but I just know it was bad. Stephen from Norwich, just don't say where you're from next time, and we'll just leave it like that.
It wasn't Stephen from Norwich as in NRF1, Steve.
Well, I was kind of hoping Mr. Russ would be here so I could ask him, but he's not. Now, I'll just leave you with your own conclusions. He's not here. And it was probably a bit awkward. I can't remember if he's ever gone on about Susie Perry or not.
I don't think he has. And from what I heard, it was a bit of an obsession.
Oh.
So I thought he would have mentioned it beforehand, to be honest.
Poor Susie. She didn't deserve that.
To be honest, I don't think much of her, to be honest. She annoys
me. Oh, no news. Just because Steve loves her, it doesn't mean you have to not like her quite as much. Well... Next, I mean, I don't know if Steve... this is Steve Rust, by the way, now. I don't know if he listens to the podcasts after we've done them. I'm sure he does, religiously, clearly. But we'll have to ask him next time he's in, because I think that needs checking. Team of the weekend? Anyone, please? I was going to say Williams, mainly because they were so involved in everything and they were the talking point. And at before the race, I did really want them to do well, so... But for Force India,
if you can Force India for the new car and door points result, and I like the new look of the car.
Yeah,
it's cool.
Happy. It's cool.
It's something different. Yeah, I do think Force India did well, and yeah, Williams were the other one who did well also.
And in terms of highlight, anything stand out? I mean, I must admit, I hate saying this, but it was just a really great race. So that for me, to sit down live and watch the race properly and be enthralled by it, having probably the last three or four watched a late record and fallen asleep and had to rewatch it again and then keep falling asleep, it was nice to be enthralled by the race.
I think the as I mentioned earlier, the Hamilton trying to overtake Massa at the start, I think it just like yeah, I thought, oh, this is going to be a good race. And also the little clip of Stirling Moss and Lewis Hamilton,
yeah,
and Lewis Hamilton calling Stirling Moss dude, which I thought was quite
good. And I don't even think Stirling Moss is Lewis's biggest fan either. That's was sort of the subtext to all that. But yeah, spot on. That was a great feature.
Yeah, my highlight actually was William McLaren trying to get the front wing on Alonso. It was just like, right, no, this isn't quite. It was a bit Chuckle Brothers.
Left a bit, right a bit.
Yeah, to me, to you, it was the Chuckle Brothers, I thought. And yeah, that was my highlight because it was just hysterical in some ways for a team like McLaren to do that. But as you say, also the race in general with the rain, the actual race we had, not just a procession.
It was gone.
So I was going to just add, also enjoyed Ron Dennis in an interview with Martin Reynolds. Yeah, so I'm stealing it then, yeah, for calling Eddie Jordan the village idiot.
Well, even when they were fitting the nose cone, that footage kept cutting to Ron Dennis, who was just had one of those steely looks on his face. I don't think he has any other look really, does he? But it was one of the steely faced looks. Right, I think that sums up the British Grand Prix pretty well. Top work, gents. Now, we didn't have any tips from you this week, Carl. Shame. But we'll bring those up in our part two podcast, if you like, as we look ahead to Hungary. That'll be with you shortly, I most definitely hope. But in the meantime, make sure you stay connected with us. Get in touch. Have a look at the website, which is nrf1.uk. Probably is still short of those updates, I promised. It's just a bit like McLaren, really. The updates just aren't happening and they're not really effective.
They're
on the way. And when they hit in about 3 years' time, we'll be, you know, gunning for the BBC. Just you watch. But they are on their way. But you can still visit the website. It's still got all the necessary links and contact information you could possibly hope for. It's also got our blogs, which is also short of a blog from me, which given the last few years I've been writing a column every week for the newspaper, I have literally not written a blog all season. So I'm going to have to get on with one of those. Rich, your blog is going up during the week and it's a cracker, so it'll be great to see that. And I'm sure the other guys will be chipping in as well. And if any of you out there want to join the community and write blogs for us or get in touch, then you can do so. All the contact details are on the website, but there are other ways of getting hold of us too, like on Twitter. As I said, the handle is at the NRF1. You can get me, I'm at Michael J. Bailey, and we do have an email address, which is nrf1podcast@gmail.com. These two guys are on Twitter too. Rich, you are?
I am at @Bax_kid.
@Bax_KID. I feel like I need to spell, I don't know why. Kyle, you?
@KCumbers.
See, I don't feel like I need to spell that one out.
See, that's because I made mine in a moment of youthness. And
always regret those things, don't I? Always. Okay, I think that's everything. Thanks as always for listening. We do really appreciate you taking a bit of time out to follow us, and I hope you enjoy these podcasts. And we'll be back soon as we look ahead to Hungary and with all the news. Until then, bye for now.
Thanks for listening to this podcast, which is brought to you by Acast. Like you, millions of people enjoy podcasts every week. Acast works with thousands of amazing shows, reaching the most engaged, loyal, and desirable audiences on demand. For more information about advertising, sponsorship, and branded content opportunities for your business, contact us using sponsor@acast.com.